Chapter 6. A Theory is Refuted.
I should have said, Partner Elijah, said Daniil, speaking suddenly, that is an obvious conclusion.
Bailey cast a surprised look at his robot partner.
Why obvious? He asked.
The lady herself, said Daniil, states that she was the only person who did or who would see her husband. The social situation on Solaria is such that even she cannot plausibly present anything else as the truth. Certainly Agent Grewer would find it reasonable, even obligatory, to believe that a Solarian husband would be seen only by his wife. Since only one person could be in seeing range, only one person could strike the blow, and only one person could be the murderer, or murderess, rather. Agent Grewer, you will remember, said that only one person could have done it. Anyone else he considered impossible. Well?
He also said Bailey, that one person couldn't have done it either.
By which he probably meant that there was no weapon found at the scene of the crime. Presumably Mrs. Del Mar could explain that anomaly.
He gestured with cool robotic politeness toward where Gladiah sat, still in viewing focus, her eyes cast down, her small mouth compressed.
Jehoshaphat, thought Bailey. We're forgetting the lady.
Perhaps it was annoyance that had caused him to forget. It was Daniil who annoyed him, he thought, with his unemotional approach to problems. Or perhaps it was himself with his emotional approach. He did not stop to analyze the matter. He said,
That'll be all for now, Gladiah. However one goes about it, break contact. Goodbye.
She said softly,
Sometimes one says, done viewing, but I like goodbye better. You seem disturbed, Elijah. I'm sorry, because I'm used to having people think I did it, so you don't need to feel disturbed.
Daniil said,
Did you do it, Gladiah?
No,
she said angrily.
Goodbye, then.
With the anger not yet washed out of her face, she was gone. For a moment, though, Bailey could still feel the impact of those quite extraordinary gray eyes. She might say she was used to having people think her a murderess, but that was very obviously a lie. Her anger spoke more truly than her words. Bailey wondered of how many other lies she was capable. And now Bailey found himself alone with Daniil. He said,
All right, Daniil, I'm not altogether a fool.
I have never thought you were, Partner Elijah.
Then tell me what made you say there was no murder weapon found at the site of the crime. There was nothing in the evidence so far, nothing in anything I've heard that would lead us to that conclusion.
You are correct. I have additional information not yet available to you.
I was sure of that. What kind?
Agent Grewer said he would send a copy of the report of their own investigation. I have that copy. It arrived this morning.
Why haven't you shown it to me?
I felt that it would perhaps be more fruitful for you to conduct your investigation, at least in the initial stages, according to your own ideas, without being prejudiced by the conclusions of other people, who, self-admittedly, have reached no satisfactory conclusion. It was because I myself felt my logical processes might be influenced by those conclusions that I contributed nothing to the discussion.
Logical processes. Unbidden, there leaped into Bailey's mind the fragment of a conversation he had once had with a roboticist. A robot, the man had said, is logical, but not reasonable. He said,
You entered the discussion at the end.
So I did, Partner Elijah, but only because by that time I had independent evidence bearing out Agent Grewer's suspicions.
What kind of independent evidence?
That which could be deduced from Mrs. Delmar's own behavior.
Let's be specific, Daniil.
Consider that if the lady were guilty and were attempting to prove herself innocent, it would be useful to her to have the detective in the case believe her innocent.
Well?
If she could warp his judgment by playing upon a weakness of his, she might do so, might she not?
Strictly hypothetical.
Not at all.
was the calm reply.
You will have noticed, I think, that she concentrated her attention entirely on you.
I was doing the talking, said Bailey.
Her attention was on you from the start, even before she could guess that you would be doing the talking. In fact, one might have thought she would, logically, have expected that I, as an Auroran, would take the lead in the investigation. Yet she concentrated on you.
And what do you deduce from this?
That it was upon you, Partner Elijah, that she pinned her hopes. You were the Earthman.
What of that?
She had studied Earth. She implied that more than once. She knew what I was talking about when I asked her to blank out the outer daylight at the very start of the interview. She did not act surprised or uncomprehending, as she would most certainly have done had she not had actual knowledge of conditions on Earth.
Well?
Since she has studied Earth, it is quite reasonable to suppose that she discovered one weakness Earthmen possess. She must know of the nudity taboo, and of how such a display must impress an Earthman.
Was she explained about viewing?
So she did. Yet did it seem entirely convincing to you? Twice she allowed herself to be seen in what you would consider a state of improper clothing.
Your conclusion, said Bailey, is that she was trying to seduce me. Is that it?
Seduce you away from your professional impersonality. So it would seem to me. And though I cannot share human reactions to stimuli, I would judge, from what has been imprinted on my instruction circuits, that the lady meets any reasonable standard of physical attractiveness. From your behavior, moreover, it seems to me that you were aware of that, and that you approved her appearance. I would even judge that Mrs. Delmar acted rightly in thinking her mode of behavior would predispose you in her favor.
Look, said Bailey uncomfortably, regardless of what effect she might have had on me, I am still an officer of the law in full possession of my sense of professional ethics. Get that straight. Now let's see the report.
Bailey read through the report in silence. He finished, turned back, and read it through a second time.
This brings in a new item, he said. The robot.
Daniil Olivaw nodded.
Bailey said thoughtfully, she didn't mention it.
Daniil said, you asked the wrong question. You asked if he was alone when she found the body. You asked if anyone else had been present at the death scene. A robot isn't anybody else.
Bailey nodded. If he himself were a suspect and were asked who else had been at the scene of a crime, he would scarcely have replied, no one but this table. He said, I suppose I should have asked if any robots were present.
Damn it. What questions does one ask anyway on a strange world? He said,
how legal is robotic evidence, Daniil?
What do you mean?
Can a robot bear witness on Solaria? Can it give evidence?
Why should you doubt it?
A robot isn't human, Daniil. On Earth, it cannot be a legal witness.
And yet, a footprint can, Partner Elijah, although that is much less a human than a robot is. The position of your planet in this respect is illogical. On Solaria, robotic evidence, when competent, is admissible.
Bailey did not argue the point. He rested his chin on the knuckles of one hand and went over this matter of the robot in his mind. In the extremity of terror, Gladia Delmar, standing over her husband's body, had summoned robots. By the time they came, she was unconscious. The robots reported having found her there together with the dead body. And something else was present as well. A robot. That robot had not been summoned. It was already there. It was not one of the regular staff. No other robot had seen it before or knew its function or assignment. Nor could anything be discovered from the robot in question. It was not in working order. When found, its motions were disorganized, and so, apparently, was the functioning of its positronic brain. It could give none of the proper responses, either verbal or mechanical, and after exhaustive investigation by a robotics expert, it was declared a total loss. Its only activity that had any trace of organization was its constant repetition of, you're going to kill me, you're going to kill me,
you're going to kill me. No weapon that could possibly have been used to crush the dead man's skull was located. Bailey said suddenly,
I'm going to eat, Daniil, and then we see Agent Gruer again. Or view him, anyway.
Hannes Gruer was still eating when contact was established. He ate slowly, choosing each mouthful carefully from a variety of dishes, peering at each anxiously as though searching for some hidden combination he would find most satisfactory. Bailey thought, he may be a couple of centuries old. Eating may be getting dull for him. Gruer said,
I greet you, gentlemen. You received our report, I believe.
His bald head glistened as he leaned across the table to reach a titbit.
Yes, we have spent an interesting session with Mrs. Delmar also, said Bailey.
Good, good, said Gruer. And to what conclusion, if any, did you come?
Bailey said,
that she is innocent, sir.
Gruer looked up sharply.
Really?
Bailey nodded.
Gruer said, And yet she was the only one who could see him, the only one who could possibly be within reach, Bailey said. That's been made clear to me. And no matter how firm social customs are on Solaria, the point is not conclusive. May I explain?
Gruer had returned to his dinner.
Of course. Murder rests on three legs, said Bailey, each equally important. They are motive, means, and opportunity. For a good case against any suspect, each of the three must be satisfied. Now, I grant you that Mrs. Delmar had the opportunity. As for the motive, I've heard of none.
Gruer shrugged.
We know of none.
For a moment, his eyes drifted to the silent Daniil.
Perhaps I should say that she apparently could not have committed the crime.
Apparently?
She must have disposed of the weapon some way. So far, we have lacked the ingenuity to find it.
Bailey said dourly,
Have you considered all possibilities?
I think so.
I wonder. Let's see, a weapon has been used to crush a man's skull, and it is not found at the scene of the crime. The only alternative is that it has been carried away. It could not have been carried away by Rykane Delmar. He was dead. Could it have been carried away by Gladiah Delmar?
It must have been, said Gruer.
How? When the robots arrived, she was on the floor unconscious, or she may have been feigning unconsciousness, but anyway, she was there. How long a time between the murder and the arrival of the first robot?
Well, that depends upon the exact time of the murder, which we don't know, said Gruer uneasily.
I read the report, sir. One robot reported hearing a disturbance and a cry it identified as Dr. Delmar's. It was apparently the closest to the scene. The summoning signal flashed 5 minutes afterward. It would take the robot less than a minute to appear on the scene.
Bailey remembered his own experiences with the rapid-fire appearance of robots when summoned.
In 5 minutes, even 10, how far could Mrs. Delmar have carried a weapon and returned in time to assume unconsciousness?
She might have destroyed it in a disposer unit.
The disposer unit was investigated, according to the report, and the residual gamma ray activity was quite low. Nothing sizable had been destroyed in it for 24 hours.
I know that, said Gruer. I simply present it as an example of what might have been done.
True, said Bailey. But there may be a very simple explanation. I suppose the robots belonging to the Delmar household have been checked and all were accounted for.
Oh, yes.
And all in reasonable working order?
Yes.
Could any of those have carried away the weapon, perhaps without being aware of what it was?
Not one of them had removed anything from the scene of the crime, or touched anything, for that matter.
That's not so. They certainly removed the body and prepared it for cremation.
Well, yes, of course, but that scarcely counts. You would expect them to do that.
Jehoshaphat, muttered Bailey. He had to struggle to keep calm.
He said,
Now suppose someone else had been on the scene.
Impossible, said Gruer.
How could someone invade Dr. Delmar's personal presence?
Suppose, cried Bailey.
Now there was never any thought in the robot's minds that an intruder might have been present. I don't suppose any of them made an immediate search of the grounds about the house. It wasn't mentioned in the report. There was no search till we looked for the weapon, but that was a considerable time afterward. Nor any search for signs of a ground car or an air vehicle on the grounds? No. Then if someone had nerved himself to invade Dr. Delmar's personal presence, as you put it, he could have killed him and then walked away leisurely. No one would have stopped him or even seen him. Afterward, he could rely on everyone being sure no one could have been there.
And no one could, said Gruer positively.
Bailey said, One more thing, just one more. There was a robot involved. A robot was at the scene.
Daniil interposed for the first time. The robot was not at the scene. Had it been there, the crime would not have been committed.
Bailey turned his head sharply, and Gruer, who had lifted his glass a second time as though about to drink, put it down again to stare at Daniil.
Is that not so? Asked Daniil.
Quite so, said Gruer. A robot would have stopped one person from harming another, first law.
All right, said Bailey. Granted, but it must have been close. It was on the scene when the other robots arrived. Say it was in the next room. The murderer is advancing on Delmar, and Delmar cries out, You're going to kill me. The robots of the household did not hear those words. At most, they heard a cry, so unsummoned, they did not come. But this particular robot heard the words, and first law made it come unsummoned. It was too late. Probably it actually saw the murder committed.
It must have seen the last stages of the murder, agreed Gruer. That is what disordered it. Witnessing harm to a human without having prevented it is a violation of the first law and, depending upon circumstances, more or less damage to the positronic brain is induced. In this case, it was a great deal of damage.
Gruer stared at his fingertips as he turned the glass of liquid to and fro, to and fro.
Bailey said, Then the robot was a witness. Was it questioned?
What use? He was disordered. He could only say, You're going to kill me.
I agree with your reconstruction that far. They were probably Delmar's last words burned into the robot's consciousness when everything else was destroyed.
But I'm told Solaria specializes in robots. Was there no way in which the robot could be repaired? No way in which its circuits could be patched?
None, said Gruer sharply.
And where is the robot now?
Scrapped, said Gruer.
Bailey raised his eyebrows.
This is a rather peculiar case. No motive, no means, no witnesses, no evidence. Where there was some evidence to begin with, it was destroyed. You have only one suspect, and everyone seems convinced of her guilt. At least everyone is certain no one else can be guilty. That's your opinion, too, obviously. The question then is, why was I sent for?
Gruer frowned.
You seem upset, Mr. Bailey.
He turned abruptly to Daniil.
Mr. Oliva.
Yes, Agent Gruer.
Won't you please go through the dwelling and make sure all windows are closed and blanked out? Plainclothesman Bailey may be feeling the effects of open space.
The statement astonished Bailey. It was his impulse to deny Gruer's assumption and order Daniil to keep his place when, on the brink, he caught something of panic in Gruer's voice, something of glittering appeal in his eyes. He sat back and let Daniil leave the room. It was as though a mask had dropped from Gruer's face, leaving it naked and afraid.
Gruer said, That was easier than I had thought. I had planned so many ways of getting you alone, I never thought the Auroran would leave at a simple request, and yet I could think of nothing else to do.
Bailey said, Well, I'm alone now.
Gruer said, I couldn't speak freely in his presence. He is an Auroran, and he is here because he was forced on us as the price of having you.
The Solarian leaned forward.
There's something more to this than murder. I am not concerned only with the matter of who did it. There are parties on Solaria, secret organizations.
Bailey stared.
Surely I can't help you there.
Of course you can. Now understand this. Dr. Delmar was a traditionalist. He believed in the old ways, the good ways. But there are new forces among us, forces for change, and Delmar has been silenced.
By Mrs. Delmar? Hers must have been the hand. That doesn't matter. There is an organization behind her, and that is the important matter.
Are you sure? Do you have evidence?
Vague evidence only. I can't help that. Rykane Delmar was on the track of something. He assured me his evidence was good, and I believe him. I knew him well enough to know him as neither fool nor child. Unfortunately, he told me very little. Naturally, he wanted to complete his investigation before laying the matter completely open to the authorities. He must have gotten close to completion, too, or they wouldn't have dared the risk of having him openly slaughtered by violence. One thing Delmar told me, though. The whole human race is in danger.
Bailey felt himself shaken. For a moment, it was as though he were listening to Minim again, but on an even larger scale. Was everyone going to turn to him with cosmic dangers?
Why do you think I can help? He asked.
Because you're an Earthman, said Grewer. Do you understand? We on Solaria have no experience with these things. In a way, we don't understand people. There are too few of us here.
He looked uneasy.
I don't like to say this, Mr. Bailey. My colleagues laugh at me and some grow angry, but it is a definite feeling I have. It seems to me that you Earthmen must understand people far better than we do, just by living among such crowds of them. And a detective more than anyone. Isn't that so?
Bailey half nodded and held his tongue.
Grewer said, In a way, this murder was fortunate. I have not dared speak to the others about Delmar's investigation, since I wasn't sure who might be involved in the conspiracy, and Delmar himself was not ready to give any details till his investigation was complete. And even if Delmar had completed his work, how would we deal with the matter afterward? How does one deal with hostile human beings?
I don't know.
From the beginning, I felt we needed an Earthman. When I heard of your work in connection with the murder in Spacetown on Earth, I knew we needed you. I got in touch with Aurora, with whose men you had worked most closely, and through them approached the Earth government. Yet my own colleagues could not be persuaded into agreeing to this. Then came the murder, and that was enough of a shock to give me the agreement I needed. At the moment, they would have agreed to anything.
Grewer hesitated, then added,
It's not easy to ask an Earthman to help, but I must do so. Remember, whatever it is, the human race is in danger. Earth, too.
Earth was doubly in danger, then.
There was no mistaking the desperate sincerity in Grewer's voice. But then, if the murder were so fortunate a pretext for allowing Grewer to do what he so desperately wanted to do all the time, was it entirely fortune? It opened new avenues of thought that were not reflected in Bailey's face, eyes, or voice.
Bailey said, I've been sent here, sir, to help. I will do so to the best of my ability.
Grewer finally lifted his long-delayed drink and looked over the rim of the glass at Bailey.
Good,
he said. Not a word to the Auroran, please. Whatever this is about, Aurora may be involved. Certainly they took an unusually intense interest in the case. For instance, they insisted on including Mr. Oliva as your partner. Aurora is powerful. We had to agree. They say they include Mr. Oliva only because he worked with you before, but it may well be that they wish a reliable man of their own on the scene, eh?
He sipped slowly, his eyes on Bailey.
Bailey passed the knuckles of one hand against his long cheek, rubbing it thoughtfully.
Now that...
What? He didn't finish, but leaped from his chair and almost hurled himself toward the other before remembering it was only an image he was facing. For Grewer, staring wildly at his drink, clutched his throat, whispering hoarsely,
Burning! Burning!
The glass fell from his hand, its contents spilling, and Grewer dropped with it, his face distorted with pain.